Here we have with us Senator Davis, Senator Olson, Senator Wilkin, Senator Huggins, myself, Stevens. Pleased to have you here, Carl. Pleased to have all of you here. And if you'd introduce yourself. And
This is Denny DeWitt. My name is Carl Knutson. I'm a consultant for the Yukon-Koyukuk School District and representing Yukon-Koyukuk today.
Well, thank you, Carl and Denny, for being here, and we're looking forward to hearing a success story as I've been glancing through it and chatting with you. And so please go ahead with your presentation.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I would like to first start out by saying that because of unavoidable circumstances, Carrie Boyd was unable to be here today, and it's actually good news. She's the new superintendent in Yukon-Koyukuk. And so she is home at a board meeting that was scheduled prior to this meeting. And so she asked me to pass that condolences on to her for not being here. But I know everyone has been has met her, and Senator Wilkin, we were here 2 years ago, as you recall, and we're actually trying to do the same thing we're doing now in trying to, at that time, do a school success plan in YK that would have modeled the program that I started in Galena. I was a superintendent in Galena from 1995 to 2003 when I retired. And so what we're looking at today is actually results of those years, and the white papers in the back of the folder that you have printed will give you a quick overview of the project. It's on YK letterhead, and there's a typo in that. You know, I didn't want you to think we were adding districts to the state. It's only 53 districts, and the gal put 56 in there instead of 53, so just so you know that. It does describe the focus of the school success model, and the fact that in the state of the 53 districts, 16 had been identified for corrective action, and 6 have been actually having corrective action being implemented. 2 years ago, when I presented this plan to members of the Senate and House, we were unable to get funding, and so the school board in YK and the superintendent had watched us grow and flourish in Galena and raise our test scores. And as you know, Galena sits in the middle of the YK school district and had been a member many years ago before they pulled out and became their own district. But because of that, what I'll show you today is that the test scores were quite similar in all the villages up and down the Yukon. And during that process, when I went to Galena in 1995, I was actually aghast at the test scores. I'd never been in a school. I've been a superintendent for 28 years in Montana. I'd never been in a school with so low test scores. And of course, somewhat frustrated about what to do about it. We did develop then a plan to implement there, and we presented that plan to the Department of Education. We, since we were not able to secure funding here 2 years ago, we went to Washington and looked for money, and the voluntary public school choice people had a lot of money, but they were giving money for kids to leave failing schools to go to better schools, and that's the whole purpose of that. Well, I always think out of the box, and I creatively approached them with the idea that the more kids you pay to leave a school, the worse the school is. So why not put money into trying to fix the poor school so the kids don't have to leave? And they bought into that. So we were funded one of 8 schools in the nation and the only rural school ever funded. But they bought into the idea that instead of paying kids to leave schools to try to repair the schools they're in, and they bought into the success model that you'll see today, which actually means that we will change the way teachers teach, the way students learn, and improve the instruction so that the school becomes a school of choice and the kids don't have to leave. And so with that, I'll start this. Benefits to the district is very obvious. It's revitalizing the schools, raising student achievement, increasing graduation rates, putting technology in the hands of students, and meeting the requirements of No Child Left Behind. It also creates jobs and it provides continuity and sustainability for students.
It's an honor.
Benefits to students, obviously, is they benefit from raising test scores, lowering dropout rates, increasing college attendance, lowering drug and alcohol use, and increased community support. The project goals, obviously, is to meet the requirements of Leave No Child Behind, but also meet the requirements and the needs of the students in the villages. Obviously, the teams, anticipated partners, schools, Department of Ed had placed YK in the corrective action, and so when they saw what we were doing in the grant, they asked to have the school improvement plan resubmitted with the goals of the grant in place, and so that's been approved, and so next year the grant will actually take over many of the areas that the state has required improvement in, and so actually we're helping in that regard as a partner. We have approached the School Board Association for the Project ICE, because we know that from experience that unless you improve the situation where the children are coming from, the community and the family, and make a healthy family, healthy school, a healthy community, that the kids are not going to do well in school. And so we proved that in Galena, that unless you address the other side of the report card, the kids are not going to be successful no matter how much money you pour into that effort. Classroom Solutions is the software that we've developed to do this so that it's easy for teachers to manipulate the Alaska GLEs and keep track of the monitoring of that. And the AIM software is what's required by the state for the schools and corrective action to assess the students to see where they are. We know that obviously the results of the schools out there are not very well. The commissioner asked me to provide supportive information, and we did provide supportive information that this is successful. And we were asked to do that in Washington to the VPSC grant. And so I used the one of the things that we did in Galena was at the main campus, we implemented this success model. And I personally didn't do it. Spencer Rogers was hired to come in, and Jim Foster, my assistant superintendent at the time, were the people that facilitated this, and I give them credit for it. But what we did is we were bringing kids into the boarding school in the somewhere in the 20s to the 50s percentiles from failing schools or schools that had no high school. And if they stayed with us 4 years, and this is the qualifying school exam in 2005, no student that stayed with Galena's boarding school for 4 years scored less than 90% on the qualifying exam. So the success model worked in a boarding situation. It works as well in the other. I use, by reference, Kel-Tag, which is a YK school that's 50 miles downriver from Galena. And in 1995, when I came to Galena, the scores in Galena was the same as Kel-Tag's in 2003. So the tremendous growth would be seen in the fact that this is from the report card in 2003, and you notice that the arrow points to below or not proficient in math, writing, and reading from 75 to 85, 87 to 68%. The same year, after 4 years of the school improvement plan in Galena, we went from, this is off the report card in the state, 2003. And I used 2003 because I was the year I retired. And so I was happy to use that year because it shows what we did in those years in Galena. But you notice there's no not proficient in any one of those categories. And so it does work. And the core of it is training. We have an institute that we have to actually reteach teachers how to teach and address students, and also we train students to be more ready to accept the training. The success plan has software that we developed over the years, and in the white pages, again, the commissioner asked for supportive information. We have endorsements, letters in there that we implemented the success plan in a statewide virtual school in Idaho, serving 1,250 kids. And we had an 18% gain in their test scores the second year, 10% the first year, 18% the second year of their standardized test scores from fall to spring. So it works in a homeschool environment as well, or a virtual school. And so there's letters of support in that white papers from that as well. When we were starting our training this year, we had other districts that were aware of this happening, and so there is a letter, a request or support in the back of the binder you have from a district that is interested in being involved in this should it become available. Professional development, obviously, the context, content, and process has to be followed, and it's the National Staff Development Council has identified these as being necessary in order to have an effective instruction. We will look at certified, and we also train the aides as well, because we found that in we're working with a native, all-native school in Montana right now, and we've done it for this whole year. They've had great improvement. Of the 33 native schools in Montana on seven reservations, all 33 did not make AYP. And so they have a problem as well as Alaska. And in this school that we're working in, 100% native, they've had great gains this year, and so that'll be significant. But we found that we needed to train the aides as well, because quite often the aides got the light bulb turned on quicker than the teachers, because they saw how this was helping related to families and students being ready to learn and the students learning. Because the aides and the support staff in a lot of schools do a lot of work, a lot of groundwork with individuals. The software tracking we've developed that actually makes it easier so that the paper shuffle of teachers having to find the GLEs and identify that they've been taught and then identify that they've been a master is all electronic and database in a database now, a web database, so that the neat thing about a corrective action school is that State Department people that are supervising those schools can at any day see how many GLEs and standards that any student or class of students or school has mastered at any given week or day of the year. So it's totally electronic and it's totally state-of-the-art. The four areas, of course, is focus on data and change, and obviously we identify learning gaps and identify targeted standards in groups and grade levels, align the curriculum to the state expectations, which we do it electronically, so that the teacher, when they do an individual lesson plan in a school, the students all have individual lesson plans that the teacher creates from electronic database, and then the state provides an opportunity with and a requirement in the corrective action schools for a formative assessment on those GLEs, so that the teachers have to use a formative assessment to assess whether they have accomplished what they set out to do in the in teaching that particular GLE or standard. Focus on change. One of the hardest parts is recognizing and admitting that the current process is not successful. And I'm here to tell you, in 1995, when it came to the state, many, many schools were in the 20, 30, 40 percentile, and they still are today. And so I know that we've raised our efforts in financing those schools. We've raised our many areas of expertise for there, but again, it gets back to schools having to determine where they're going to put the resources, and it has to be to improve student education. We need to, of course, implement the web-based software so that we can track the standards. And one of the neat things about it is it has a curriculum map, and the teachers must put every GLE in a month that they're going to teach that particular curriculum. And it's easy to supervise because instead of when the door closes, nobody knows what's going on there, the principal can look electronically at the curriculum map and all of the standards that the teacher has to teach are listed in that curriculum map. Parents can print it out. The students, it's not a mystery anymore what they're going to learn that year. And the teachers like it because they can print out the whole year of a curriculum map. We create the curriculum maps for the main subjects, and then our approach is identifying verbs, and it's so important that you can't assess something unless you know that it's going to be an item that's taught, and then of course related to a verb. And so Bloom's taxonomy is involved there, training to recognize appropriate assessments, and then the development of corrective loops. And so what do you do if a student doesn't get it, and 80% do and 20% just don't get it? Well, traditionally, I guess those kids, they go on to the next thing, and they won't, you know, maybe 70% will get it and 30% won't. But what we do is we teach that student again in a corrective loop. And so one of the things that we've got a contract with Odysseyware, which provides electronic instruction that students can test into every grade, every subject, and be able to have a corrective loop. So after school, provide computers for kids to check out and take home. And so we need to get the parent engagement as well to help in allowing that student to have another bite of the pie. So corrective loops are important, but they have to be ready to do the next standard when it comes up. And so that's important. Collaborative meetings, they're required by the state in corrective action, and so we also require that. The collaborative meetings is the teachers get together and share the GLEs that they've taught, the successes and also their failures, so that they can, you know, improve. Focus on evaluation. Obviously, we need to see what works and what doesn't work and be accountable for that. Currently in the grant, we have the software and the training and the assessment from Integrated Youth Development, and that is sort of a spin-off of the ICE program. And what it does is it actually helps students with assets and resiliency, and it's so important that we address those things and make parents and community aware that students need to possess assets in order to be able to learn. And so we address the other side of the report card, and so many communities don't do that, and it's critical if you're going to make improvement. So here again, we take the this is out of the book that Education Alaska Style that School Board Association puts out, and it gives importance to the fact that if kids do not possess assets, there's 40 possible assets they can possess, 20 internal, 20 external, and some of them may be as simple as self-worth, self-esteem, 5 caring adults in that student's life, and the external assets is church, community, and involvement in those areas. And if a student has less than 10 assets, then they're 62% more inclined to be violent, whether it be fighting, hitting, carrying a weapon to school, physical harm, being threatened. Illicit drug use increases with in students that don't have as many assets. And so one of the things that is really enlightening when we train teachers to be careful and to be very diligent about watching for assets, we actually have people in the grant that develop asset building activities so that after school and on weekends and lock-ins, you can build assets in kids. You can identify which ones they have, which ones they don't. A case may be, for example, when the teacher finds out that this is an important thing, that when the kid came up to show their paper and had a lot of red marks on it and sent it back to do it over, probably the student couldn't do it correctly. correctly, or they had not had so many mistakes. Well, by the dejected response of that kid going back to his seat with red all over his paper, that teacher just missed being one of the caring adults in that kid's life. And so those things become very important when teachers are simply aware of how they address students to build assets. By the same token, if you have more assets, then the leadership and the values go way up. And so it's so important that, as well as the negative, the positive is there, and it's important that we address that. Project evaluation, obviously would focus on collecting data, because we would share that as well, as we've always done that. And then we would we have a very diligent evaluation process set up for the Voluntary Public School Choice Grant. We would replicate that to use in this project as well. Proposed budget, we were using as a guide the $8 million that we got from the Voluntary Public Schools over the five-year period, the first year's planning, the next 4 years. And so we used that in putting together a draft of a budget that would include the necessary pieces. And as you see, many of the anticipated contracting services would be like with the School Board Association for the assets and the resiliency and the ICE project, with people like Spencer Rogers and those to do the training on the ground like we did in Galena. And I understand that they're working in Copper River now as well. And so there are districts that are hopefully going to be in line with this. And our goal is to, if we get this project funded, we would look at involving a representative from the department, a representative from the school board, a representative from the different factions to be on a not-for-profit corporation that would operate this for the Yukon Koyukuk District. There is a vehicle under Senate Bill 281 or thereabouts a couple years ago that provides for a cooperative agreement with another district. And so that's a process that we would engage to have another district be, or districts be involved in this and have them apply to be accepted as a school to participate in this school success model.
I guess. Thank you, Carl. Is that
That's it.
Okay, good, good. Well, I appreciate that, and I'm sure there's some questions. It's interesting, you know, as you listen to you speak, I realize that as I get older and older, more and more, that the difference in my life was made by just a handful of teachers, and that's what happened. You know, when you you talk about a teacher who hands back a paper that with lots of red marks and doesn't help the student get any farther than that, and being aware of the impact you're having on students. And so I think we've all been fortunate to have a few really, really good teachers throughout our life. How do you go about retraining the teachers? You know, I have lots of friends who went through educational school. I never did. That wasn't my my area of interest or my area of study. But it seems to me that in a lot of cases, well, for example, let me tell you a story that when I went back to the college I graduated from several years later, actually 20 years later, and worked in the administration there for a summer, that the same people were in the education department teaching that were there 20 years before. They hadn't changed, and they were still boring students at that time. So I think the problem is that education schools can often be pretty tedious, and I don't know why that is, and other departments would be more exciting. So how do you go about taking a person who is a teacher, who has been teaching for 10, 15 years, and help retrain them into this model that you're talking about, to be more aware of students and to help students actually make these steps forward?
Well, we have a trainer of trainer model, and we also implemented a six-day training session where they have six solid days of training on all the components of the success model, and we give those teachers for encouragement to come to that a $2,000 stipend to come. It's outside their school contract in the summer, and then we also provide three credits We have a, it's an accepted college program that we got it accepted through the University of Montana. Bozeman and also UAA is going to offer the same type of benefit. And so the teachers get 3 credits to attend the 6 days of in-service. And then it's followed up by 3 more credits for that year. So they get 6 credits. So it's a very high-level track that they're on. And in the summer, we take as high as maybe 10 volunteers of the 60 teachers they have in the district and send them to for a week to Colorado to Spencer Rogers Training Institute. And then we use those people as trainers for the 6 day workshops as well as the other people we have. So it's actually in May we do a 6 day session, and then the first week of August we do 6 days again. So it's actually 12 days that a lot of these people will be involved. And then we have a couple people that are hired as educational specialists that actually go out to villages and help them get their arms around finding the GLEs and teaching them and using the components. Plus, we have developed a very good video conferencing system with the villages so that we can have, you know, daily and weekly sessions to help motivate and answer questions and keep people on track.
And so you, that's where the computers come into. You're also using on each individual student, you know, if they missed, if they didn't know what a dangling participle was, you made sure that you got back with them and spent some time with them so they would understand that.
That's correct. And in the software, they simply log in and they find it. They can either do individual, this is aligned to the state standards, they can either go in and go to a specific standard, or as what's very effective, many small villages only have 2 teachers, 3 teachers, some 1 teacher. And so they can't be a master to everyone. But with the software we provide, this gives them a high qualified course that can be monitored, and it also tracks the student as well. So if they had a problem with the dangling
participle. I missed that week when we did that in high school, and never understood it since.
Yeah, and I think archery is an aimless sport, he said with a quiver, you know, anyway. this is the kind of thing that you can take and put a student into that thing in a corrective loop. So that would be a corrective loop. And he could do it after school, he can do it with the aid, he can do it in the resource room, and he can do it at home. So we got a lot of bites of the apple. Important thing is that kids have to be exposed to things 7 times in 28 days for them to remember that forever.
Corrective loop, that's pretty exciting stuff. Well, thank you, Carl. I appreciate your comments. Questions, anybody on the panel? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Carl, you were just mentioning looping, which piqued my interest, and you said a little more. Are there some other things you could pass on to us about looping? That, as an example, does looping, when you didn't make the standard and you were that 20 percentile, does looping actually occur in the classroom, or is it after class activity, or?
It can actually be both. It starts out of the classroom, obviously, because the teacher is the one that knows that student didn't get it. And if there's an aid available, that aid could take that student in corrective loop. But the resources is available in the classroom, but because there is also an effort made for that student not to be focused on doing something that everybody else got, and the others are starting on something else and they're back doing this, then they're going to have another learning gap because they're not getting what's being taught now. So we focus on providing support from families and have after school and free time sessions of corrective loops, as well as provide that to go home with a laptop. And this is available 24/7 from home or school. So the corrective loop, the student can have several chances to get that bite of the apple.
Yeah, and tell me again, I know it's trivia, but the number of times for repetitiveness over what period for retention?
7 times in 28 days.
Interesting. Probably Senator Olson and I probably, mine that fits into that category is 9C equals 5F minus 160, how to convert centigrade Fahrenheit back and forth, which you had to note of fly helicopters and airplanes, because you had to be able to flip them back and forth with the reports. So that was my 7 times in 30 days.
But you learned that.
Yes, I learned that.
It's possible, huh?
It's very important that you learn that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Knutson, I congratulate you on developing this program. Certainly, it looks like by the numbers, the success has been something that you've achieved. But one of the things I was wondering about on, it says AYD continued on the top of that page, the integrity, I'm sorry. But halfway down, it says the 7 factors with a pH factor. That's what caught my attention. I was wondering what those 7 factors were.
They were developed off of the 5 that the School Board Association developed, and basically it has to do with the 5 caring adults in a people's life, the anchors that the kids need, mm-hmm. and the community engagement. And actually, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to have Carl Rose speak to that. He's very well in to explain.
We've heard enough from Carl Rose.
And is that part of the asset evaluation that goes on the next page?
Yes, it's assets. That's what it is. It's just another term for assets.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I can continue. Back a couple pages before that, it talks about Bloom's taxonomy. Can you just enlighten me on what that means?
Okay, well, Bloom is an educator that wrote a lot of research and books on how children learn and how teachers must teach in order to be successful. And he identified the fact that a teacher could wander around in curriculum all day, and unless they actually identified verbs, that you can't assess what they're teaching. So that it's an action thing. The teachers have to identify verbs in the GLEs, and you know, a student may, well, how do you know if they may? The student will, the student can, you know, and so they're action verbs.
I see.
And so you can identify either by observation if they can do that, or requiring the student to gain the knowledge to be able to demonstrate. And so demonstrate's a verb. Demonstrate, you know, show, and perform.
And the last question, Mr. Chairman, has to do with if this model works in some of the rural school districts, what about some of the failing students that are in the urban centers? Has this been tested there as well?
Senator Olson, member of the committee, we have a model. In fact, there's a comment from Woody Jensen, a director of Adult and Community Services in Billings, Montana, and they asked us to develop and help them with a model. And yes, it's working, but they implemented it just for the kids that have dropped out, dropped in, long-term suspended, incarcerated. In Montana, the student detention centers in Billings, and so it falls upon the district to provide educational services for them. And so most often, they have to provide a couple teachers, and most times the joke is that they don't get assigned there, they get sentenced there. So they take the worst teachers and put them over in the detention center so the kids don't have a chance. And what we've done is done a model that provides for the individual learning plan, and that student has a chance then, because they can take, when they're released, that learning plan home, and when they get back engaged in a classroom in their home village or town, they can actually demonstrate what they've done and be able to carry on rather than having a big learning gap. And so Billings, Montana has used it. It's the largest school in Montana with 16,000 students. And they're using it, the model, just for corrective action and for disadvantaged students.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Carl Rose, if you'd come forward and join us here at the table. You have now spoken to us 6 times on digital learning. This is the 7th and magic time, and
yes.
we may remember it now.
this is a teaching moment, Carl. No,
was this within 28 days?
Well, that's the problem. I don't know. 28 days.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose from the Association of Alaska School Boards. I think I was one of those children and got those red marked letters that came in.
Were you sentenced to the School Board Association?
You know, I've had a chance to, well, I've known Carl for some time. We did the search that brought him to Galena. And maybe part of the story might be that when he first came to Galena, Galena was in dire straits. They were on the verge of bankruptcy. And that, the ideas that he came up with to expand services to kids not only helped the Galena School District get back on their feet, the city school district, but they created a boarding school as well as a distance learning opportunity. And I guess I'll start here that, you know, what we need in the state are good ideas. I don't think I'm prepared to endorse everything that you've just heard here today because, like you, I'm learning. But the opportunities that we have to help kids are important in light of some of the legislation that we're dealing with. And I speak of Senate Bill 285. When we talk about identifying schools that need help, intervention, where's the capacity to provide that kind of assistance? Well, some of it is here. At the School Board Association, we're advocates for children and youth. We assist local school boards in providing a quality education with a focus on student achievement through effective local governance. And so that underwrites four of our key pillars. One is what we've heard here, the Initiative for Community Engagement. This whole idea of helping communities get healthy and take responsibility for themselves. We believe healthy communities create healthy schools. And parents and families have a huge responsibility there. Many of them had not occurred to them that they can have a significant impact on young people. So as a result of some of our work in ICE, we have rewritten a book, Helping Kids Succeed Alaska Style, that it just shows you very, very easily the role that communities can play. And I'm talking about all facets of the community. Some of the other things that we've done is we've engaged in a school climate and connectedness survey for kids. It's amazing when you ask kids how they feel about their teachers, their school, their community, their parents. You know, when you have a school that is functioning well and the community is involved and kids feel like they're valued, the responses correlate to the performance of the school. I mean, I don't think it's rocket science, but I don't think anybody sampled that. Moving over to when we start to look at performance, student achievement, we created some years ago the Quality Schools, Quality Students Initiative, where we went in three districts a year to try to help them as a community create a strategic plan that would describe what it is that the community wanted for themselves and for their kids. With that, we would provide the leadership, four quadrants, one of leadership, one of program and staff, one of community engagement, and another one for resources, some of which we would contribute, some of which would require reallocation from the state's budget or from the district's budget. We've had 15 schools go through that, some of them with great success, some with not as much success, but some of our school districts have been under tremendous strain for reasons outside our control. The next thing that we've done as a big part of what we do has been the CDL. We've talked about that before. This idea of the digital era is about us, but you see a very small trace of it in our schools. The future is digital, as we've talked before. What is the responsibility and the policy call of the state to ensure that digital technology is available in our schools? And then lastly, this issue of local governance, effective local governance. You know, the issue of local control is being drawn into concern right now, as it should be if the system's not performing. And what is happening is we provide training to school boards and to school districts, leadership training, as well as advisory school boards in many of our school districts. The average person on the street, you ask them what a school board does and they have no idea. And I'm not going to ask Charlie because he was on a school board and he probably knows what they do.
Maybe may not have any idea though.
But I think the issue is one of governance. You know, in general, the public doesn't understand how we're governed. how we're financed. They don't understand how, what are the elements that impact local public policy. So we do a lot of training in that area, and I would have to share with you that in totality, what we do to the School Board Association is try to help our communities deal with their responsibilities at every level. And I would have to say that when you look at the performance of our schools, there are a large portion of our schools where local control really works. There are some areas of our schools, some of our schools, and some of our districts that are struggling. So the idea here is, if the state, by court action, is going to be asked to intervene, because you are ultimately responsible, what kind of tools do you have at your disposal to ensure that you can provide a level of oversight that would actually result in student achievement, would actually result in kids being, or communities becoming more healthy, schools becoming more proficient? Well, we have the Department of Education, and it's not their job to necessarily do all these things, but as a coordinating body, I'm sure that they want to garner as much support as they can from wherever they can get it. If the piece of legislation I referenced talks about plans of improvement in coaches, I think maybe what you heard here is a good portion of creating plans of improvement with processes and some coaches. And I guess my question would be, and it's one for the department, you know, does what we hear today, does this satisfy the requirements of standards and professional development and assessments and working with communities? There's a checklist of things that I think the department has to sign off on. And so I'm here just to listen as well. The earlier question that I got about community engagement, I have just found, you know, in my career, the biggest thing that we've ever done in a school board association is engage in our communities, because there really is anyone who can come from the outside of a community and bring a fix to you. The community has to be the group that decides they want the change. And so our work in community engagement with the assets training that we do, resiliency for kids, you just got to spend some time with kids and ask them questions like we get from the school connectedness and climate surveys. These kids observe a lot. And when you ask them these kind of questions, it's amazing what you hear out of mouths of babes. Schools that are functioning well, kids know it. When people care about kids, teachers care about kids, parents care about kids, they know it and they behave differently. So that's, you asked me a simple question, I went all over the place like I normally do. But I would tell you that I had a chance to take a look at some of the things we talked about here. And as I mentioned, these provide some options. And I think maybe the job of the department and yourselves are going to be to take a look, does this meet the standards that the laid out by the department? And if they do, great. If they don't, how can they be modified and can they be replicated around the state? I think those are the issues of our day.
Well, thank you, Carl. One of the charts in here is on promoting positive behaviors and attitudes, and it talks about assets that children have, and that if you have 10 assets, you're here and having trouble with leadership and diversity, whereas if you have more assets, you're better capable of coping with life, I suppose. Is that something that you have bought into that you think is of value?
That is the premise behind what we do in our assets training. The idea here is, and we have a list of 40 assets, and I'll bring each one of you a book to the office today. We've got a couple thousand, hundreds, I wouldn't say hundreds of thousands. We got almost 100,000 books that are out. They're in doctor's offices, they're almost everywhere. And I'll bring them to you, because what it does is, this started out as a research project, and the data was turned into a book on a how-to. And so it's got 40 chapters to it, small chapters, 2 pages a piece, that describe what the assets are, how they're used, and then they have the study that you just referenced there. When kids have more supporting assets, they actually behave differently.
Well, I'd like to see that. I think everyone would if
provide that. I'll make that available to you today.
Thank you, Carl. Any further questions of Carl? Thank you very much, sir. Barbara Thompson, our interim commissioner, would you have any comments or thoughts you'd care to share with us, Barbara? And congratulations.
I'm on my way out.
Well.
Okay.
But for the time being, you're the focus here.
Yeah.
Welcome.
The department is intervening in 5 districts, and one of which is the Yukon-Koyukuk District. And we had already worked with that district on a district improvement plan related to corrective action this year. And then the district got this grant, and we were surprised to hear about it and excited that the district and Carl came down to tell us about what was in it. And there were questions about whether some of the things in the grant overlapped with what the department was directing the district to do. And of course, we don't want to have redundancy and having a district do the same thing twice. So our staff have been looking at the plan and how it relates to our district improvement plan and the school improvement plans for the Yukon-Koyukuk School District. And we are, in particular, looking at the formative assessment system that's being provided through the grant. The department had already directed the district to use the Ames Web formative assessment system, the Alaska computerized formative assessment system, both of which can be monitored online at the department as well as in the district. And so we are looking to make sure that this system provided by the grant does actually align to state standards, align to the standards we have for use of those formative assessment systems. So we are working to see what parts of this grant are either similar or not. And I would not say that this grant is replacing the district improvement plan that we have provided to the district, but we're hoping they will work in concert to move everything in that district forward. We are excited to hear about this grant. I know this is a planning year, so there aren't any results yet for this grant in the Yukon-Koyukuk School District. We look forward to finding out what the results are, and if they're positive, we would of course look for replication opportunities with other districts. So I would not say endorse this. We are waiting to see what the results are. And as an interim commissioner, we're going to have a new commissioner very soon. And we are also seeing changes on our state board. So I know our state board and the new commissioner are going to want to follow this very carefully to see what works, how we can work together in the districts in which this program is. So we are excited to look forward to that.
Well, thank you, Ms. Thompson. So when you enter into a corrective action with the district, you're not saying exactly how the steps they have to go through to achieve success, but you're saying that there are lots of ways to do it, and this may be one of them. It may coordinate with what you want quite well. It may not, but at some point you'll make that recommendation to the district that this is not going where we want it to, or it is going where we want it to.
When we intervene in a district, we do provide very specific activities that the district must participate in. There are 3 core foundational items that have occurred in each of the 5 districts in which we've intervened. That includes focused weekly collaborative meetings within each school led by the principal that focus on student achievement, their struggles, their successes, but very focused to stay on target about student achievement and what's happening in those schools with those students. The second thing is the use of and monitoring of the formative assessments in each classroom so we can see which teachers are using them, how the students in every classroom in that district, how the students are doing. And we can check to see if it's being implemented or not. We get back to the district, hey, something's not going on in this school. So the use of those formative assessments to guide daily instruction in the classroom, to make adjustments. Everybody's not getting this grade level expectation or this standard. You need to backtrack, get it, and then move on. And the third thing that we are requiring all districts that we intervene in to do is participate in leadership training. The principals from every school, as well as district administration, are required to participate in leadership training to help those principals know what good instruction really looks like, how they can assist their teachers in their schools, walk through a classroom in 5 minutes and see if grade level expectations are being taught and if the focus is on instruction. So those are 3 givens, and we do tell them what they need to do, and we help them arrange for any training that they need in order to get that done.
Well, thank you, Barbara. I appreciate that. Do you remember a book years ago? When I was in college, it was called Up the Down Staircase. And what the book, I remember one of the stories that were really shocking to me was a teacher who a student turned in a paper, a teacher returned the paper and corrected it and said, this is all wrong and you don't know what you're talking about. And the student committed suicide. That took her own life, as I recall. I mean, a horrible story. But a sort of indication that often teachers have no idea the impact they have on students. So what Carl has told us about being aware of the impact you have on students, is that something certainly the department is supportive of, I would assume?
Absolutely. We are supportive of the resiliency work that the grant proposes, as well as all of the efforts that the School Boards Association has put forth in this area. Yes.
Thank you, Barbara. Senator Hardins.
Yeah, thank you. Barbara, I'm assuming that the department doesn't have a red flag that's gone up for what Carl's told us today. I mean, more or less, you say it's within the general parameters of what we want to do in a school district. Is that roughly true?
There are elements of the plan that are similar to what we are already asking districts to do, and I can't say that all of them are the direction the department would go in initially when we would intervene in a school or a district, but it is a positive approach to making changes district-wide in the Yukon-Koyukuk School District.
Yeah. I've talked to Carl previously, and you know, quite frankly, I'm impressed. And I remember when IDEA was born out of Galena, and going to the first meeting that happened in Anchorage, and a whole bunch of my neighbors from in and about Matsu were there because they were wanting someplace for their kids to go homeschooling and all that sort of thing. But it appears to me, if we are in fact intervening in, I think it's six districts, five presently, maybe whatever the case may be, that assuming some level of experience, results, what have you, that we've looked at, that it may in fact have some merit to say, hey, Carl, go do that. I mean, this is a test project over here. You know, we don't know that what we're doing is going to be, you know, 75% successful, 60%, whatever the number turns out to be. And why wouldn't we look for different techniques that maybe have some track record?
We are always looking for successful techniques. You are correct in that. We do know that the intervention that we have done in the five districts so far, and I'm not taking credit for the successes of any of that intervention, because it is those people who are on the ground in the schools who choose to make the difference. But in the districts in which we've intervened, with the strategies so far that we have required, we have seen increases in student proficiency across the district. We've seen additional schools meet adequate yearly progress that had not met before. So we do believe that what we're doing is on the right track. And yes, we always need to look for other ways to get there. And I believe, after looking at results from how this plays out in the Yukon-Koyukuk School District, we will see whether it plays out and is as positive, and we are hoping it will be. We are certainly hoping it will be.
Thank you, Commissioner. Let me give Carl a couple minutes to sum up, if you'd care to. Any thoughts you would care to leave us with?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I simply want to close by saying that I appreciate the opportunity to have your ear this morning. And I again reiterate that I'm here because the school board in Yukon-Koyukuk were very excited about this particular opportunity. Some of the board members had tears in their eyes and said that this is like a prayer come true, because they know they needed help. They live in these villages and know that they have got to make a difference, and they haven't been able to do that. So they went into retreat and voted to have this implementation the number one goal of the district in the future, and hired a new superintendent and did a unique thing. When they hired a new superintendent, which happened to be Kerry Boyd, the director of this grant, they had the applicants write at least a two-page essay on how that superintendent would carry out this project effectively in the district. So they're very serious about it. And I think I'm here because 2 years ago, as I met with Senator Wilkins and some others at that time, the board approached me a couple of years ago and asked me to help replicate what we did in Galena in the villages around Galena in the Waikiki District. I did come up and make an attempt to do that. We were late getting started, and so this actually, what I'm looking at, and I guess I would call in comments I've heard many times from Senator Stevens and others in Washington that says, you know, that the state has to pull up their socks and start doing their own thing and not expect handouts all the time. And so this is a perfect opportunity to have an $8 million grant be matched by efforts in the state to replicate what we feel has been very successful in other places. And as we, with the direction from the state, have rewritten the school improvement plan for next year in the Yukon-Koyukuk District, we've implemented the strategies that the state is requiring as well as the ones that we had, and it was unbelievable how well they've matched, because everything that we require is things that the state wanted to do and have been doing in the districts too. So I close by saying that Yukon-Koyukuk would be remiss in not thanking you for the opportunity to try to share with other districts what they feel is going to be very successful for them.
Well, thank you, Mr. Knutson. I appreciate the presentation. It's been fascinating to hear what you have to say, and obviously you've had many successes, and not the least of which is having Denny DeWitt with you, and he hasn't said anything. I mean, that's pretty remarkable right there. So, thank you very much, and with that, we're adjourned.